I want you to just think back to the early 2000s for a second. Like, really picture it.
Oh boy, cargo pants.
Yeah, exactly, cargo pants. But specifically, think about what was in the pockets of those cargo pants, right? You probably had this bulky cell phone in one pocket just for making calls.
Right.
And then you had a totally separate digital camera hanging around your neck for photos.
A heavy one, too.
Yeah. And like an MP3 player clipped to your belt for music. And then maybe if you were driving, you had one of those standalone suction cup GPS units stuck to the windshield of your car.
Oh, yeah, falling off the glass every time you hit a bump.
Yeah.
You were essentially walking around with an entire utility belt of like
Yeah.
dedicated single-purpose hardware.
Exactly. And then, the smartphone comes along and just absorbs all of them. It collapsed all that heavy, clunky hardware into software, and it just made
It's
sense.
a massive leap forward.
Right. But lately, if you look at the current tech landscape, it feels like we are actively going backward, like into this massive resurgence of the single-purpose gadget, which is why this recent source we're looking at today is just so vital right now.
Yeah, it really cuts through the noise.
It's an entry from a series called AI Field Notes. Specifically, we're looking at Part 11, which was published on March 29, 2026, and it's titled, "Your Apple Watch is Already a Voice Transcription Device."
Which is a bold claim, but they back it up beautifully.
They really do. The author essentially proves that you can completely bypass this whole expensive, subscription-heavy AI gadget craze. Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today for this deep dive is to figure out how to build a zero-cost, totally private voice-to-notes system using tools you probably already own.
It's a deeply instructive source, honestly, because it's not just a clever weekend tech project.
Yeah.
The author's journey exposes how heavily we've been conditioned to buy specialized hardware to solve what are fundamentally like software routing problems. If you want this pipeline, you have the tools sitting on your wrists and your desk right now.
Let's look at why the author even went down this rabbit hole to begin with. Because they wanted a completely frictionless voice-to-notes pipeline.
Just a way to effortlessly capture thoughts, right?
Exactly. A way to just speak their thoughts, log meeting notes, or brainstorm on a walk, and have those thoughts automatically transcribed, summarized, and like filed into their actual workflow.
Which is the dream, really.
It is. But if you look at the industry's answer to that desire right now, it is aggressively pushing dedicated hardware. And I mean, the math gets out of hand so quickly.
It's a highly lucrative recurring revenue model for these hardware companies, for sure.
Oh, it's wild. The source actually breaks down the specific costs. You've got the Plaid Note, which hits you for, I think, $159 upfront.
And that's just the device.
Right. Plus another $100 to $240 every single year for the subscription. So you are pushing like $400 just for year one.
Ouch.
Then there's the Note Pin S at $179 plus that same hefty annual fee. The BAI is a bit cheaper upfront, like $50, but then it drains $12 a month for the
That
service.
really adds up.
Yeah. I mean, you could skip the new hardware and just use a software tool like Otterdawn AI, but that's still $100 to $200 a year. And then we have the Limitless Pendant, which was $199 and is now literally just a dead, discontinued product.
Which highlights the ultimate risk of the dedicated hardware trap, doesn't it? If the startup behind your shiny new smart pendant pivots or runs out of venture capital, you are left holding a very expensive, totally useless piece of plastic.
At a paper rate.
Exactly. Furthermore, the marketing pitch for all these devices is always, effortless capture. But carrying a secondary device actually introduces massive physical friction.
Oh, totally.
It's another battery you have to remember to charge, another device to sync, another thing to accidentally leave in a coat pocket or run through the washing machine.
And that completely ignores the privacy vulnerability, which is huge. These pendants are designed to record your board meetings, your private brainstorming sessions, maybe even your medical appointments.
And that audio doesn't stay on the device.
Right. It gets uploaded to a third-party server. It's just sitting in someone else's cloud infrastructure.
That is a fundamental loss of control over your own data. Now, to be fair, some of these platforms do offer a free tier that lets you keep things somewhat local, bypassing the subscription.
Yeah, but how does that actually work in practice?
Well, they intentionally designed that process to be excruciating. You have to physically plug the device in, manually drag and drop the audio files onto your computer, paste them into a separate local transcription tool, wait for that to finish, and then manually copy the resulting text into your actual Notes app.
The author rightly points out that absolutely nobody sustains that kind of manual copy-paste habit for more than a week.
No, the friction just kills the utility completely.
But here is the massive blind spot that really kicked this whole project off. Why are people paying hundreds of dollars a year to wear a dedicated recording pendant when they are already wearing an Apple Watch?
It's hiding in plain sight.
Literally, your watch has a high-quality microphone, it has a dedicated physical action button, it has automatic cloud sync to your own laptop. Buying an AI pendant right now is like, it's like buying a standalone GPS for your car when your phone is sitting right there in the cup holder.
What's fascinating here is that this realization is the foundation of the author's entire argument. The entire AI recording gadget category is essentially a hardware solution to a software problem.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Using the Apple Watch means zero hardware costs, assuming you own one, and zero subscription fees. But above all else, the data never leaves your ecosystem. The raw audio goes straight to your Mac, and you own every single byte.
So if the Apple Watch is the obvious hardware, the instinct is to jump right into the developer tools, right? Like, you build a custom watchOS app to record the audio and fire it off to an AI.
That's what you would assume.
But that instinct is dead wrong. The author nearly fell into what we can call the architecture trap.
And this is where the story gets critical for anyone who builds, or really even just uses, modern software.
Mm-hmm.
The author's first draft of a solution was this highly complex, custom-built pipeline.
Right. They sketched out this beautifully clean system on a whiteboard. They were going to code a custom watchOS app, use a Vercel serverless function.
Which is essentially just a way to host small pieces of code in the cloud without managing a full server, for context.
Right, exactly. So they'd use that, run the audio through Whisper for transcription, and finally use Claude to summarize it. It looks perfect on paper.
Flawless.
But before they wrote a single line of code, they happened to casually mention this plan to a friend who had actually already spent weeks trying to build exactly this kind of custom Apple Watch recording app.
And the friend's response was essentially, you know, turn back now. Do not do this. It is a nightmare.
That one conversation saved the author weeks of agonizing debugging, because the friend had uncovered three fatal flaws in trying to force custom code onto the watch. The first, and most punishing, is watchOS battery management.
Oh, it is brutal.
Explain the mechanics of that, actually, because on the surface, Apple's ecosystem is heavily marketed as just working, right? Like, why is it so hard to just upload a basic audio file from your wrist?
Well, it came down to physics and system priorities.
Mm.
The battery inside a smartwatch is minuscule, right? Measured in a few hundred milliamp hours.
Barely anything.
Exactly. So if a rogue third-party app keeps the cellular or Wi-Fi radio active in the background, trying to upload, say, a 20-megabyte audio file, it will drain that battery in an hour.
Oh, wow.
So Apple's operating system acts as this ruthless dictator. It aggressively prioritizes keeping the screen on and the time accurate over everything else. If your custom app tries to run a background network task, the OS will often just abruptly terminate the connection to save power.
Wait, if it silently kills the connection, that means as a developer, you don't even get an error message.
No, no error message at all. You just think your code is broken.
That is so frustrating.
You are literally left chasing ghosts. Your file upload might succeed on Monday, but then fail silently on Tuesday because the watch decided its battery was slightly too low, or maybe you just hadn't interacted with the app recently enough. You simply cannot build a reliable daily workflow on top of an operating system that is actively trying to assassinate your processes.
That is brutal. And the friend said there were other failure points too, right? Something about CloudKit.
Yes, the second point of failure. If you try to use CloudKit, which is Apple's developer API for syncing data, you inadvertently build a highly fragile four-hop pipeline.
Four hops. Okay, walk me through that.
First, the watch records the file. Second, it attempts to push that file up to CloudKit servers.
Assuming it doesn't get killed by the battery dictator?
Exactly. Third, your custom server has to constantly pull CloudKit. It has to repeatedly ask, do you have a new file yet? Do you have a new file yet? Over and over.
Like a kid in the back seat on a road trip.
Perfectly said. And fourth, the server finally pulls the file down to process it. That polling architecture is notoriously brittle. Every single hop is a potential point of failure.
And the third flaw the friend ran into was chunking, which sounds like a consequence of that battery management dictator again.
It is. Because watchOS strictly limits how long a background audio recording can run without user interaction, developers are forced to chop the audio into these 30-second segments.
So if I'm recording a long thought.
Right. If you record a 15-minute brainstorming session on a walk, your app is forced to generate 30 separate audio files.
Oh, what a mess.
It might slice a word completely in half, And then you were asking CloudKit to gracefully sync a massive bulk batch of tiny fragmented files, which it often struggles to do reliably.
So the friend's ultimate takeaway after weeks of suffering was that recording the audio on the REST is actually trivial. But finding an automated, bulletproof workflow to actually move the audio off the watch is nearly impossible if you play by the standard developer rules.
Which forced a complete paradigm shift for our author. The hard part of this project wasn't the artificial intelligence. It wasn't writing a clever summarization prompt. The absolute hardest part was basic, reliable file transfer.
But the author found a bypass, because if building a custom app fails due to the OS killing the transfer, you just have to find a transfer method that the operating system won't kill.
Exactly. You need what developers call a platform primitive.
Right, a platform primitive. What does that mean in this context?
A platform primitive is a fundamental building block native to the operating system itself. It's code written by the platform engineers, deeply integrated into the core kernel, rather than an application sitting in user space.
And the primitive the author realized they could exploit was just hiding in plain sight. It's Apple's native voice memos app.
Yep. It doesn't rely on those fragile third-party developer APIs. It uses Apple's internal, highly privileged iCloud sync engine.
The exact same invisible system-level daemon that seamlessly syncs your massive photo library in the background.
Precisely. Apple applies entirely different rules to its first-party apps. They would never let their own battery management algorithms kill the synchronization of their own voice memos.
Of course not. That infrastructure has been hardened over a decade to handle large payloads, maintain state, and sync flawlessly without destroying the battery.
To prove it, the author mapped the voice memos app to the physical action button on the side of their Apple Watch Ultra. They press the button, speak for 30 seconds, and hit stop.
And then?
They walk over to their Mac, open the Finder, dig into the hidden system files, and there it is. Almost instantly, an M4A audio file drops into a buried folder with a ridiculous path name, like library, group containers, group.com.apple.voicememos.shared.recordings.
The moment that file appeared, the author's entire complex, multi-tiered architecture diagram was rendered entirely obsolete.
Gone in a flash.
They didn't need to struggle with watchOS coding. They didn't need a Vercel backend. They didn't need CloudKit at all. They just needed a way for their Mac to realize a new file had landed in that specific hidden folder.
But wait, if they don't want to use that brittle polling method you mentioned earlier, where a script constantly loops and asks the folder, is there a new file yet? How do they actually trigger the next step?
Well, they leveraged another platform primitive, one built directly into macOS called Launched. Specifically, they used a system directive called WatchPaths. I actually looked into Launched after reading the source, and it's fascinating. It's essentially the grand central dispatcher for the Mac's operating system. It has been running in production since 2005.
It's ancient, rock-solid tech. And WatchPaths works at the kernel level of the file system. It doesn't waste CPU cycles constantly checking a folder.
Right.
Instead, it basically registers an interest with the operating system. When the file system writes a new M4A file into that specific voice memos folder, the file system fires an interrupt, an event that instantly wakes up Launched.
And then Launched is configured to silently wake up a Python script to process the audio.
It's brilliant.
It is. It's like realizing you don't need to build a custom logistics company, buy delivery trucks, and hire drivers just to send a package to your friend across town. Because the postal service literally drives past both of your houses every single day anyway. Just put the package in the mailbox.
That is a perfect analogy.
The author sums this up with an incredible philosophy, too. They say, the best code is the code you don't write.
It is the ultimate form of technical leverage. By co-opting boring, invisible, maintenance-free infrastructure, the total maintenance cost of this system drops to zero. Every line of code you avoid writing is a line that cannot contain a bug.
Oh, that's such a good point.
This approach drains no extra battery. It has no version numbers to track or dependencies to update. It gracefully delegates the agonizing problem of reliable file syncing to a software layer that has already solved it flawlessly for decades.
Okay, so the M4A audio file is safely sitting on the Mac's hard drive. The underlying plumbing works perfectly, but a raw audio file sitting in a hidden folder isn't a note. It's just noise.
Right. It's just raw data.
So how do you get a machine to actually understand human speech without losing the context? This takes us into the processing phase, and frankly, it highlights a massive evolutionary leap in how AI models function today.
We are looking at the transition from text-based LLMs to truly multimodal neural networks.
Yeah.
And it fundamentally alters how we construct software pipelines.
Let's look at the old way first, just for context.
Right.
If you wanted to do this, just say 6 months ago, you had to perform a two-step dance. Step one, take the audio file and feed it into a dedicated speech-to-text model, something like Whisper. That model churns for a bit and spits out a giant unformatted block of plain text. Step two, you take that text document and feed it into a standard LLM to actually summarize the concepts or pull out action items.
You are dealing with two separate API calls, managing two entirely different models, and creating an intermediate text format that basically acts as a bottleneck.
And the author points out why that intermediate text step is so destructive. Text serialization strips away all the nuance of human communication.
It flattens it.
Completely. When you flatten a voice recording into plain words, you lose the tone, you lose the speed, the hesitation, the emphasis. Like if I say, "Oh, brilliant idea," with a heavily sarcastic sigh, a standard speech-to-text model just dutifully types out the words, "Oh, brilliant idea."
And when the summarization LLM reads that text an hour later, it takes it entirely literally. It has no mechanism to detect the sarcasm because the acoustic data that carried the sarcasm was destroyed in step one.
The meaning is literally lost in translation.
So what does this all mean for our author? If text serialization ruins the context, you need a way to feed the audio natively to the AI. Is that where Gemini Flash comes in?
Yes, exactly. Gemini Flash is a multimodal model.
Right. And when we say multimodal, it means the neural network isn't just trained on text tokens. It is trained to process raw audio waveforms directly.
It's actually listening.
Yes. It maps sound frequencies, pitch, and intonation directly to meaning, entirely bypassing that text bottleneck.
So the author's Python script just hands the raw M4A file directly to the Gemini API, along with a prompt asking for a very specific output format.
And in one single computational pass, Gemini listens to the audio, understands the context, and sends back a perfectly structured JSON file.
Wow. And what's in that file?
It contains the exact transcription, a bilingual summary in English and Chinese, key bullet points, and the list of action items.
It's important to understand why requesting JSON is so crucial here, by the way. JSON, which stands for JavaScript Object Notation, is just a way of formatting data. It turns an unstructured, messy paragraph of human thought into highly predictable, labeled key-value pairs.
It organizes the chaos.
Right. It puts the summary in one labeled box and the action items in another. This makes it incredibly easy for other software to read and route that data later.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the efficiency of doing all of that in one multimodal step is staggering. It eliminates entire classes of software bugs. You don't have to worry about text encoding errors or formatting mismatches between two different models or the latency from multiple network requests.
It's just cleaner.
Much cleaner. When the AI model literally hears your voice, it interprets your intent far more accurately than when it just reads a sterile transcript.
Okay, so the transfer was native, the multimodal processing was flawless, and now we have this highly structured JSON file full of brilliant, organized notes sitting on the Mac.
But we aren't quite done yet.
Right, because we have a final mile problem. Having a JSON file on your hard drive is pretty useless to a human being. It needs to get out of that hidden folder and into your actual workflow, whether that's Obsidian, Apple Notes, Slack, or Jira.
And how the author solved this routing problem reveals what might be the most powerful architectural lesson of the entire project.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because historically, this final mile is where developers burn the most time. Integrating different software tools together is notoriously tedious.
Oh, it's the worst part of the job. The old way of doing this would be writing a massive, fragile web of custom API integrations.
Right, you'd have to read the documentation for Slack, handle OAuth authentication tokens, format the specific HTTP payloads they require, write all this complex error handling logic.
And then you'd have to do it all over again for Jira.
Exactly. But the author didn't do any of that. They built a single script called agent.ppy, which basically just acts as a wrapper around Claude code.
Now, Claude Code is an AI agent that runs directly in your computer's terminal. Unlike a standard chatbot in a web browser, it actually has agency.
It can do things.
Yes, it can view your file system, execute commands, and interact with the operating system just like a human programmer would.
Wait, really? So you're telling me this script doesn't have any hard-coded API keys or endpoint URLs for all these different apps?
None. Zero. The Python script simply takes that structured JSON data we just created and hands it to Claude Code in the terminal with a natural language instruction.
Just English.
Just plain English. Something like, take these action items and create a new Jira ticket for each one.
How does the agent actually execute that if it doesn't have hard-coded instructions? Like, how does it know what to do?
It operates on this observe, think, and act loop. Claude receives the request, realizes it needs to interact with Jira, and looks at the tools available on your system. It can actually read your local Jira command line tool documentation.
It's insane.
It finds your existing authentication variables stored in your system environment. It structures the correct payload, executes the command in the terminal, and then reads the terminal output to verify if the ticket was successfully created.
And if it fails?
If there's an error, it reads the error, figures out what went wrong, and tries a different syntax.
That completely flips the script on how we build personal tools. Instead of acting like a programmer who has to painstakingly write a dozen different instruction manuals for a dozen different apps, you just hand the data to an AI assistant and say, hey, put this in Slack for me. And it figures out the mechanics on the fly.
It radically democratizes automation. It's a huge shift.
Yeah.
The marginal cost of adding a new feature to your software used to be measured in, like, days of reading documentation and debugging network requests.
How easily?
Now the cost has dropped from debug a REST API to simply describe the destination you want in plain English.
The scope of what the author accomplished here is just incredible. The entire project took them 30 minutes to build.
Half an hour.
Yeah. It was 10 commits, 12 files, and roughly 850 lines of code. And honestly, Claude Code wrote the vast majority of that code for them anyway. The only external dependency they had to install was the Google Generative AI library just to ping Gemini. Everything else was handled by native OS tools.
Which brings us to the ultimate meta lesson of this source. We are living in an era of unprecedented abundant AI tooling. But the highest leverage skill you can develop right now isn't actually knowing how to build complex systems.
What is it then?
It's recognizing when not to build them.
Oh, that's good. The pieces are already lying around us. The high-quality recording hardware exists on your wrist right now. The invisible bulletproof sync infrastructure has existed in macOS for 20 years.
The multimodal intelligence to process raw audio exists in models like Gemini.
Right. And the AI agents to route the data exist in tools like Claude Code. You just need the perspective to look at all these disparate parts and connect the dots rather than trying to reinvent the wheel by buying a $200 plastic pendant.
The best architectural decision you can make is realizing you don't need to build an architecture at all. Just use what's there.
So bringing this full circle for you, we started by talking about how the smartphone absorbed the standalone GPS, the digital camera, and the MP3 player. It collapsed all that unnecessary hardware into software. This deep dive proves that with a bit of ingenuity, you don't need to fall back into the trap of buying single-purpose AI gadgets and paying endless monthly subscriptions. Your Apple Watch and your Mac are a Swiss Army knife. You just have to know how to open the right blades.
And that leaves us with a truly provocative thought to ponder, really. If we are currently using AI agents as this universal glue layer in the terminal to route data between different programs, what happens when operating systems like macOS or Windows start connecting these infrastructure dots natively?
Oh, wow.
Will the concept of downloading standalone apps to perform specific tasks eventually disappear completely? Will our devices stop being a fragmented grid of applications and instead become one fluid, multimodal reasoning engine that simply listens to our intent and quietly routes the data exactly where it needs to go?
That is a wild thought to leave you with. Keep questioning the gadgets they try to sell you. Look closely at the tools you already own, and we'll see you next time.